Hey guys,
Veronica,
Andrew,
and Nate here. We are
Foodies Watching Movies,
a podcast dedicated to
awesome movies,
great food,
and that's about it.
Check us out on the JIC Network at www.journeyintocomics.com.
Maybe throw some money over to our Patreon
so we can eat this week.
And now your feature presentation.
The following is a Journey into Comics Network production.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to episode 8 of The Poor Report. I am your host, Andrew Poor, and I want to thank you for joining me. Now, before I get into the meat and potatoes of today's show, first I want to talk about the One America Appeal. Now, the One America Appeal is a joint appeal that was originally launched by all five living former American presidents to encourage their fellow citizens to support recovery efforts from Hurricane Harvey, which inundated the Texas Gulf Coast with unprecedented flooding. This special appeal has been expanded to include areas most affected by Hurricane Irma and Maria, which included Puerto Rico, the Virgin Islands, Florida, all of those southern areas that were affected by the hurricanes that we saw this year. Now, recently, as of Saturday, there was a benefit concert where all former presidents were there, and Trump recorded a special pre-recorded statement thanking everyone for their support. And I'm going to talk about the One America Appeal, but I'm going to open it up with the audio from the ad that the five former presidents put together. So I'm going to start with that right now.
Recently, our country has witnessed catastrophic devastation. Hurricanes and flooding have upended lives and livelihoods.
Across this great country, Americans have answered the call.
That special calling that compels us when others are down to step up and do whatever it takes.
America's at her best when, against all odds, we come together and lift each other up.
Please donate to OneAmericaAppeal.org. America needs you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And though Trump couldn't be there in person, he had this pre-recorded statement, which I will play here, which is probably the longest audio of Trump you'll probably hear on this show at any point in the future, unless something else happens.
My fellow Americans, the heartbreaking devastation caused by Hurricanes Harvey and Irma and Maria and Nate, along with the terrible wildfires in California, have impacted millions of our fellow Americans. As a nation, we mourn for those who died, and we pray for those who lost their homes or their livelihoods. In the aftermath of these terrible storms, the American people have done what we do best. We came together, we helped one another, and through it all, we remained resilient. We came together as one as we rushed to the aid of Texas, Louisiana, Florida, Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands. Now, as we begin to rebuild, some of America's finest public servants are spearheading the One America Appeal. Through this effort, all five living former presidents are playing a tremendous role in helping our fellow citizens recover. To Presidents Jimmy Carter, George H.W. Bush, Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, and Barack Obama, Melania and I want to express our deep gratitude for your tremendous assistance. This wonderful effort reminds us that we truly are one nation, under God, all unified by our values and our devotion to one another. I also want to thank every person, including everyone here tonight, who has contributed to this vital effort. There is a lot of work ahead of us, and I want to thank groups like the Points of Light for making such a big difference in our disaster response efforts. Together, we will recover, we will rebuild, and we will come back stronger and better than ever before. Thank you. God bless you. And may God bless the United States of America.
Here's also a short excerpt from the other president speaking at the concert.
America is known for volunteer work. In fact, we are way ahead of any other nation. Last year, there were 67 million Americans who volunteered to help other people in America. And that came to 8 billion hours of work worth $184 billion.
And our friends in Puerto Rico and the American Virgin Islands have only begun to dig their way out of what could be still a calamitous disaster, but can be a new beginning if we just do what we ought to do and prove that the heart of America, without regard to race or religion or political party, is greater than our problems.
All of us on this stage here tonight could not be prouder of the response of Americans when they see their neighbors and they see their friends, they see strangers in need, Americans step up.
First of all, I'm thrilled to be able to introduce 39, 42, and 44 to one of the finest universities in the United States. I too am here to urge you to give to this fine fund, and I want to thank all the volunteers, but I'm here for another reason. I speak for the folks right here when I say we really admire and love George H.W. Bush.
So that was that, and I want to encourage all of my listeners to go to oneamericaappeal.org to donate to help all those who are affected. I know Puerto Rico is still heavily affected, with still most of the country not having any usable water or electricity, and I know there's been some talk about FEMA relief and all that going away. I don't think that's the case, but I still encourage everyone to give what they can and help this great cause. Okay, now getting back into the more of the show of what we normally do here. It was recently came out that Jimmy Fallon has decided not to do anti-Trump jokes. He doesn't want to join this anti-Trump bandwagon, so to speak, that has been helping the late night shows of like Jimmy Kimmel and Stephen Colbert, for example. He said in a statement, "With Trump, it's just like every day's a new thing. He has a lot of material. A lot of stuff is hard to even make jokes about. It's just too serious." Now, if you remember during the campaign, Trump went on Jimmy Fallon's show, and there was the famous hair-ruffling interview where he made a statement about Trump's hair and asked if he could play with it, and you see him swirl Trump's hair all around and made this whole big thing, and it's something that's been kind of thrown back in his face since that interview. And now he's gone on to say, like, "Oh, I don't want to talk about Trump anymore. I'm not political. I'd prefer pop culture and entertainment news and all that." And that's all y'all want to talk about. Compared to Stephen Colbert and Jimmy Kimmel, who have always come out hard against Trump and have found a lot of strength in their material and their ratings that has come from Trump's election. Stephen Colbert, famous for the Colbert Report, has always been a political news-based comedian, so he's just thriving on this material, and Jimmy Kimmel has had a lot of personal attachment to what's happened with the events in Vegas, with what happened to his child, with a lot of stuff that's been going on. He's fueled a lot of discussions and got a lot of viewership out of this. So it's kind of interesting to see that we have one of the biggest late-night hosts, Jimmy Fallon, is kind of saying he's no longer going to attack Trump. He's just going to kind of avoid the conversation altogether. I think he said if there's something that's a particularly good, he may comment on it, but he's not going to go for those kind of jokes, which is kind of ridiculous, because late-night hosts are supposed to make light of the events that are happening in the world and in the U.S. So I personally believe that he should try and find some material, because people look for that for levity. But I can also understand that We get so much political news on a daily basis through social media, through the news watch on TV. TV shows talk about events in a weird, vague way. So maybe there's just a sense that maybe people tune to that show because they can avoid political talk or news related to Donald Trump, either positive or negative. So we'll kind of have to see how it develops from that. But I personally haven't really watched too much of Jimmy Fallon's show. I've watched some of his bits before. I've never sat down and really watched his show, or really a lot of the late night shows for that matter. So my opinions are not great on that topic. But I have watched some Colbert Report, especially, or not Colbert Report, I think it's The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. I watched some of that, first when he started after David Letterman retired, and then after the whole political campaign, and when he was trying to be more edgy after he kind of got his feet wet with this new show format, kind of shedding that persona that he had. And kind of moving forward from this whole thing with Jimmy Fallon, there's been a lot of stuff also coming out of Hollywood with the whole Harvey Weinstein thing. So it recently came out that Harvey Weinstein has had countless sexual assault allegations come out against him from very well-known female celebrities over the years dating back 20 years from now, through his involvement with being a kind of a super producer with his Miramax and with the Weinstein Company. What kind of fallout from that is there's been a lot of women coming out. A lot of well-known celebrities have come to Twitter, come on Facebook, release statements, and it led to him being expelled from the Academy. It led him from being fired from the Weinstein Company. And you know, you kind of really messed up and really became a horrible person when a company you created can oust you. And kind of also kind of interesting with this is that a connection he has with a lot of independent filmmakers is that he got a lot of filmmakers their start. I know a lot of Kevin Smith's earlier films were financed through Miramax, as well as Quentin Tarantino films, and they've known this guy for 20 years now. And a lot of them come out and said that they didn't know anything about this. I know on Kevin Smith on a recent podcast came out and said he knew nothing about this, and that he's devastated. He actually got choked up on his Hollywood Babylon podcast talking about it, and then announced that all residuals from all Miramax produced films, he would give those residuals to a women's support organization. I can't remember the organization offhand, but you can clearly see he feels guilty, and I'd like to think he's a nice guy, but if this has been the most open secret, it's hard to believe that someone he's worked with for that long didn't know. The same thing can be said for Quentin Tarantino, who's been definitely raked over the coals recently about it, because he has came out and said he did know some from the beginning, but didn't know to the extent of it. He knew that certain women he's talked to have said that, and he didn't know if it was a one-time thing, or if he didn't have the whole story. So it's something that a lot of people in Hollywood knew this was going on and didn't say much about it. And even as far back as when Seth MacFarlane hosted the Oscars, he made a statement about Harvey Weinstein because he had a personal friend who was assaulted or had some negative reaction to a meeting with Harvey Weinstein. And Harvey Weinstein now has gone to like a rehab for these kind of things, and he's definitely, I don't think him or his company are going to survive this. I'm assuming Weinstein Company may shut down altogether, because a lot of celebrities have come out and saying they're not going to do business with the Weinstein Company anymore. So I think it's only a matter of time before we see the fallout from all of this happen. And I think I'm just going to keep up with the stories developed, so I think on future shows, as we get more resolution with this, I'm going to talk about it more. I kind of waited, because this has been out for a couple weeks now, but I kind of waited until I got some more facts and information, because it seems like since a couple people have come forward, it's really opened the floodgates, and a lot of people who we've never even would have thought about it have come out like this. And kind of moving away from Harvey Weinstein, some more stuff that's going on in Hollywood, I'm going to have some good news. California has become the first state to require pet stores to sell only rescue animals. Under legislation signed by the governor, starting in 2019, all cats, dogs, and rabbits must be from shelters or adoption centers. And the store will be fined $500 for each animal not a rescue. As we know, as the United States has always had a problem with overpopulation of animals, kennels are overrun a lot with cats and dogs and other smaller animals like rabbits, guinea pigs, those sort of thing. And yet, these pet stores will go to puppy mills or from kind of those heavy-duty breeders who breed for quantity, not quality, and will flood their stores with those, and some people have negative connotations about shelters, so they won't go there. I've only got pets from shelters or as strays. I volunteer at a shelter. I know there's a lot of good quality pets, cats, dogs from there, and they definitely deserve this. And I know California is a large state. They have a large stray population that end up in shelters, and a lot of pets get euthanized on a daily basis due to overcrowding in these places. So I'm really happy that California has come out, and I hope it moves to being a federal bill to make it for all places. I think that would really help stop this overpopulation issue and because no pet deserves to die because of an overcrowding issue, especially when there's pets that are brutally made to reproduce constantly by these shady organizations. I know it's come out that like a lot of these breeder organizations come out saying they don't agree with this because obviously this is hurting their bottom line if they can't sell their puppies that they've bred. And I know there's a lot of very well done breeding places, a lot of mom and pop places that breed, but I'm assuming there'll be stipulations on that, and you can still get in contact with them outside of a pet store. But I think opening up to pet stores allows people to get access to these dogs in a way that some people don't go to shelters because they don't like the vibe that a shelter gives off. I know there's a lot of non-kill shelters, a lot of kill shelters as well, especially in California. So I'm definitely happy that this is happening, and I hope it definitely rolls into other states in the near future. Okay, another big thing that has happened is regarding a statement that Trump made regarding how he contacts families who've lost loved ones due to war, like people that have been killed in action serving in the military. Trump made a statement saying that, unlike his predecessors, Trump calls all the victims' families, which was quickly taken off the... It was quickly made known that that was a lie. And they made statements. I know Bush's people, Clinton's people, Obama's people have said, like, no, our presidents have called, invited people, talked to them in person. That's an outright lie. And then Trump kind of said, no, that's just what I've heard. He kind of backtracked later in that interview. And then it kind of came out to some of the calls he did make. And there was this big thing that's kind of come up regarding a call that he had made to someone who had recently lost a loved one. I believe it was her son or husband. I actually can't remember. But he called, and basically, according to a representative who was in the limo during this call with this woman, was that he basically said something on the lines of, he knew what he signed up for, but that doesn't make it any less difficult. And that whole knew what he signed up for line definitely rubbed this representative, Frederica Wilson, the wrong way. And she's come out, and then it involved her getting in a fight with Trump, and Trump's come out on Twitter, like, denouncing her, calling her wacky because she wears a cowboy hat and is a little more flashy. But I believe she's a Texas representative, so it's not all that uncommon for that area. And it's something that's been blowing up, and it's been causing a lot of problems, and people have come out one way or another. They're supporting him, denouncing him. I know some other widows have come out, and one person released a video that I saw of their interaction with Trump, and it displayed a much different tone on his voice. And I don't know if it's just depending on the people or the amount of calls he does in a day with regarding this, but I still think it's something that he should definitely approach with kinder words. It's tough to lose someone to war, someone that meant a big part of you, and to not really know their safety on a daily basis, then to get a call like that, one, they're gone, and then get a call later from the president that basically said, at least what it's construed to be, is that he knew what was going to happen. Like, not like there was a doubt that he was going to... It made it almost sound like, yeah, he was probably going to die doing that, which is really ridiculous. And I think as a president and as anyone who speaks to people who have lost someone near and dear to their hearts, they need to approach it delicately and sincerely and choose their words carefully. And I figure if Trump's doing this on a daily basis, he could almost, not quite have a form letter, but almost know exactly what he should say. Keep it personal, but don't speak off the cuff like that, because that's something Trump is common to do, and sometimes speaking off the cuff can cause him a lot of problems. And I think this is one of those cases where he should really think clearly about it. I know after this, he made a statement about how maybe President Obama didn't call one of his cabinet members, Kelly's son, who died, and then Kelly came out, also echoed the thing that Trump said to the woman, but said Obama didn't call, but he honestly didn't remember. He probably got a letter. He knows, maybe got a personal interaction. There's not a lot of details there, but it seems that whenever Trump does something wrong or gets in a problem, he will march one of his cabinet members or someone in his administration forward to defend him and to kind of go against the people that are criticizing him, which is kind of ridiculous. And I know a lot of his cabinet should speak for themselves and shouldn't just toe the bottom line because they serve the president. But that's kind of my thoughts on that. I know other people might have their own opinions. And I'm sure this story is going to be developing for a while. So I'm sure by the time I record episode 9, episode 10, moving forward, I might have more resolution on that. But that's kind of where I stand on that right now. It also came out last week that Bush and Obama on Thursday both gave separate speech that kind of came out to denounce Trump. Now, I have the article here. I kind of want to read it because I think both of their speeches, both for different things, both kind of echoed similar sentiments. So I'm going to pull it up here. Because Obama appeared at a rally for Democrat Ralph Norton, who's running for Virginia's governor's race, and then George W. Bush separately was at a George W. Bush Institute event. So I'm going to kind of read some of the quotes I have from this article, which is from the Washington Post. Here's what Obama said. He said, "You'll notice I haven't been commenting on politics a lot lately, but here's one thing I know. If you have to win a campaign by dividing people, you're not going to be able to govern. You won't be able to unite them later if that's how you start. We've got folks who are deliberately trying to make folks angry, to demonize people who have different ideas, to get the base all riled up because it provides a short-term tactical advantage." Which seems very directed at Trump and how he won the 2016 election. George Bush, in his own speech, said, "Bigotry seems emboldened. Our politics seem more vulnerable to conspiracy theories and outright fabrication. We've seen nationalism distorted into nativism, forgetting the dynamism that immigration has always brought to America. We see a fading confidence in the value of free markets and international trade, forgetting that conflict, instability, and poverty follow in the wake of protectionism. We have seen the return of isolationist sentiments, forgetting that American security is directly threatened by the chaos and despair of distant places where threats such as terrorism, infectious disease, criminal gangs, and drug trafficking tend to emerge. In all these ways, we need to recall and recover our own identity." And one thing that the article also goes to mention is that noticeably both men choose the word cruel to describe the state of our politics. Obama said, "Why are we deliberately trying to misunderstand each other and be cruel to each other and put down each other? That's not who we are." And Bush said, "We have seen our discourse degraded by casual cruelty. At times it can seem like the forces pulling us apart are stronger than the forces binding us together. Argument turns too easily into animosity. Disagreement escalates into dehumanization." Now, it's kind of crazy that it's come to a point where Bush and Obama have come out and kind of denounced what America is turning into under the Trump administration. Now, both of them probably have criticisms about each other, but they're both united in the fact that they want to see America thrive. They want to see America united. They want to see America be the United States, which is what it is. We need to strive to be inclusive, not exclusive, and to think of our fellow man, especially in times of difficulty. We've seen it with the events in Charlottesville. We've seen it in the events in Vegas. And we really need to put our best foot forward and try and really live and put effort into uniting each other instead of dividing. now I'm kind of trying to figure out the best way to move forward in my show, because obviously what's been going on, it's kind of hard to think you can segue from one topic to the next. Obviously, I try and be somewhat humorous in the show, but sometimes it proves difficult. But I'm going to try and move forward either way. So it's come out, another bill has actually come out that's going to halt election meddling on social media. So this will affect websites, apps, search engines, social media, and networks with over 50 million unique visitors, and is able to put social media on par with radio and TV with their disclosure requirements. This is a lot to prevent people donating, people creating false stories, foreign governments putting out their own propaganda to sway elections. And it's going to put them under the same requirements and the same rules as we already see on TV and radio as that form of outreach. So this should, hopefully, if it gets through, will help fix a lot of the problems we saw in the 2016 election going forward with the 2020, the 2018, all those future elections. Now, one thing that Trump has routinely criticized is the fake news and this mainstream media putting out articles that aren't well-researched, that are negative towards him. And one news organization that he always seems to praise is Fox News. Now, Fox News put out a recent article that wasn't well-researched, and they kind of got duped by it. So, what the article originally said was that a military hero, who's a retired Vietnam veteran, very well-decorated, was creating a bronze and glass presidential seal that he wanted to give to President Trump as a gift. So, obviously, that's something that really appeals to the base. That's something that Trump would want to hear about. That's definitely something that Fox News like to put forward. So they put this article up and said, basically, like, decorated war hero creates gift for Trump. And then it turns out that this person, though a veteran, didn't serve in Vietnam, wasn't as well decorated as he was, still was making the bronze seal. But it really came out that they pushed the story out because it sounded really good to them without doing the due diligence and the fact checking. And if this was, say, something that was negative against Trump, and all the articles were put out by a different organization like CNN or Huffington Post or MSNBC or one of those other news organizations, and they had to go out and say that was untrue, Trump would have pounced on that and really gone all out. But when this happens, they did a quick retraction, a quick statement, no word from Trump about it. So it kind of shows the dichotomy of almost like in Trump's administration, Fox News can do no wrong, and every other news organization is fake and are spreading lies and just trying to discredit them any way he can. And it's kind of ridiculous. News organizations do make mistakes, and they do. They need to correct them. But they're all doing the best they can. They're reporting. They're getting their own facts. They're searching out the truth, and they're sharing the truth with the people. And that's just their job. That's the job of the news, to give people like us access to things we wouldn't know about otherwise. So I think that's something that it's good that this happened. It's good that Fox had a misstep. It gets them off the pedestal that they've been put on by the Trump administration, by Donald Trump praising them constantly. It kind of knocked them down a little bit. And it kind of allows us to see that Fox News and these news organizations that Trump values are fallible, which I think is what we need moving forward. And I know earlier we've talked about jokes and with like the new late night news. So in a recent Al Smith dinner, Paul Ryan, who we know is the Speaker of the House, made a couple jokes about Donald Trump. I know he said it in one point. He said, like right when he stood up when they were applying his entrance, he says, "Enough with the applause. You sound like the cabinet when Donald Trump walks into the room." And something also saying, like, "Every morning I wake up in my office and I scroll through Twitter to see which tweets that I will have to pretend that I did not see later on." And I'm going to share a short audio of this interview, and then I'll kind of come back to talk about it.
You know what I find amazing about this is I don't think I've seen this many New York liberals, this many Wall Street CEOs in one room since my last visit to the White House. I want to promise you, though, because I've heard a few stories about how the dinner went last year. So just, I want to put your minds at ease. You can relax about my remarks. I know last year that Donald Trump offended some people. I know his comments, according to critics, went too far. Some said it was unbecoming of a public figure, and they said that his comments were offensive. Well, thank God he's learned his lesson. The truth is, the press absolutely misunderstands and never records the big accomplishments of the White House. Look at all the new jobs that the president has created, just among the White House staff. And when you read the papers tomorrow, everyone's going to report this thing differently. Breitbart's going to lead with, Ryan slams the president amongst liberal elites. New York Times is going to report, Ryan defends the president in a state Hillary won. And the president will tweet, 300,000 at Al Smith dinner cheer mention of my name.
Now, as you see, it's good to sometimes joke about what's going on, but Paul Ryan, as Speaker of the House, has a lot to gain from a Republican-run White House and House and Senate. And you can't joke about things that you're quietly endorsing. Yes, Trump does some crazy things, but you making light of them doesn't change the fact that some of the stuff he does is ridiculous. And a statement like the whole thing with the Twitter, saying what I have to pretend I didn't know about later on, is a little ridiculous. I think that you should, if you're involved in the administration, you shouldn't be able to make light of what the administration is doing and the stuff that the president is saying. I think you need to be held just as accountable as he is. So I think making light of it, though it's sometimes good to make light of certain events, is not something that he should be doing. And kind of with that, I'm going to kind of wrap up my show with a couple other bits of news I found were kind of interesting, both involving Trump, because this seems to be a very Trump-heavy episode. Trump came out that he is going to break with tradition and he will not have a White House pet. Now, Donald Trump is not one. He's lived in a penthouse in New York City most of his adult life. Never seemed any desire to have pets. I mean, I kind of always imagined one of his wife or one of his past wives having like a small white dog, but he doesn't seem to any point in his son's life or his youngest son's life have a pet. He has no desire to have one now. I know it's typically a new president, when they enter the White House, will have a pet because it's something that humanizes them and kind of is a fun little nice publicity thing for them. And that's something that Trump's kind of made it clear through some of the stuff he said and some of the stuff he does. He doesn't really care about good PR in that way. And maybe just doesn't want to deal with the dog, or maybe his son doesn't want one. There's probably more details about that that aren't being known. But it is what it is. I'm sure the next president will have a pet of some sort. I know all the previous presidents, most recently Obama, had those two black and white dogs, those Portuguese water dogs, I believe was the breed. But I mean, when you have kids who maybe want a pet, maybe it's easier that way. Maybe an older president with maybe a child who doesn't want a pet, maybe it makes it more easy not to worry about it, just to have it for simple publicity purposes. And another thing that I found kind of interesting moving forward with that was a tweet that I actually saw on Saturday morning, was that Trump said in a tweet, subject to the receipt of further information, I will be allowing, as president, the long-blocked and classified JFK files to be opened. Now, as you know, back in 92, there was the JFK Records Act, which was put in place to kind of block the release of all of the paperwork on John F. Kennedy and the assassination for a period of 25 years, which will come up October 26th of this year, I believe. On October 26th, they have to be released unless Trump has a good reason for them not to be, if at some point causes issues with national security, or if some other group makes a strong enough case that these files shouldn't be released. But making this statement, saying basically subject to the receipt of further information, he's going to release it. So it seems that if nothing changes, come the end of the month, we're going to have a deluge of files regarding the assassination and the life and death of John F. Kennedy to come out. And I've been an avid, not quite fan, but I have an avid interest in the administration, the presidency, and the life and death of John F. Kennedy. I have quite a few books on my shelf right now about it, and I'm definitely interested in knowing more. I know if those files become available, I'll definitely try and find as much access to them as I can to get more information, because I know there's definitely been a lot of conspiracy theorists about it, and there's been movies that have been done about it. Stephen King even wrote a book kind of about John F. Kennedy and trying to prevent the assassination called 11-22-63, which I read, and is fairly historically accurate, I mean, regarding the whole time travel aspect of it, but it's definitely something that I encourage any of my listeners to read if they enjoy Stephen King's work. It's not really a horror book. It's definitely something that's pretty well researched, and they also made a Hulu show about it starring James Franco. But back to kind of what Trump has said in this statement that he wants to release. Now, there's people that say that should be released, there's people that say that shouldn't be released. I'm personally opinion that it should be out there. If there's obviously there's something that's very critical to ongoing national intelligence efforts, maybe redact some of that information. But I think transparency, and it's been over 50 years now, it's something that should be able to be made public. I mean, there can't be much stuff that's that critical to stuff going forward. And I would definitely read it. I don't know if anyone else of my generation will, but I definitely would be interested. And I guess with that, I don't have too much else to talk about. It was kind of a hectic week when I recorded episode 7, because it was during that Podcast Mania event kind of we happened, where I was on Badcastrophe. I had Blaine on the Poor Report when I recorded it at his place. We did a Foodies episode. It's just been kind of a lot of recording that's been happening in the past week. But it's kind of nice to get back to my old formats, sitting in my usual space doing this show here. And though it's on a little bit on the shorter side, I know there's plans to put a little bit something on the back end of this episode, which I'll announce in the intro if it ends up happening. But I want to thank you all for listening. I know it's been a lot of information, a lot of Trump news that I had to get through today. Stay tuned for episode 9. You can find me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at The Poor Report. And you can follow us early on Patreon to get early access to the shows. And I also have some exclusive content on there, which you can get if you join the $3 a month comic club level on the Patreon. So that's at patreon.com/journeyintocomics. So, thanks guys, and I will talk to you soon. And as always, you can always message me directly on Facebook, you can message me on Twitter, you can reach out to me in any way and I can answer questions. And just feel free to offer comments, feedback, whatever you want to do. I wouldn't do this show without listeners listening in and the support of everyone else on the Journey to Comics Network who make my life easier and help me present the best show possible. So thanks again, everyone, and have a great week. Thank you.